Welcome to Cityscape. I'm Don Marr, sitting in for Steve Potter. A world theater premiere comes to St. Louis. Ferguson affected all of us, including local pillars of the arts world. More on both a little later, but first, it was a TV series with one of the most improbable plot lines ever, all about a vigilante serial killer whom fans rooted for week after week, year after year. The show, Dexter. If you never watched, critics say you really missed some pretty good entertainment. It ran on Showtime for 8 seasons, a bona fide hit. Dexter is the creation of our first guest, author Jeff Lindsay, who nurtured Dexter through 8 novels, and the 8th is the last of the Dexter series. The book is Dexter is Dead. Jeff Lindsay joins us by phone. Jeff, so nice to have you with us.
Well, it's great to be had. Thank you.
You know, I have to ask, with this latest book being the last in the series, if this comes as a relief to you, or do you feel like you've lost a friend?
You know, kind of a little bit of both. People had been saying for a couple of books now, wow, you must be getting tired of it. Gee, are you tired of it yet? Yeah, you're probably tired of it. And I wasn't, but I thought I was at the point where it might happen someday, and I wanted to go out on a high note. And aside from that, I've always promised that I would, you know, end before I was phoning it in. So I thought I'd end out while I was still enthusiastic.
I have to think that will be something of a disappointment to a lot of people. You and Dexter, through you, certainly have a lot of fans. I have to tell you that when the TV series was first announced and I heard what it was about, I said to myself, you know, oh, why would I want to watch this? But then I started watching it. It was like peanuts. You just couldn't stop. I binge-watched it.
Yeah, binge-watching worries me because I think of people watching an entire season over the weekend and then getting behind the wheel on a Monday morning, and it's just not a pretty thought. But it's actually, that's exactly what I was thinking when I wrote the first book. Who would want to read this? You know, a sympathetic serial killer, that's crazy. Nobody'd really want to read it. So I've been astonished at just about every step of the process as we went along.
How did the idea come to you?
Well, I was asked to talk to a group of businessmen at a luncheon, and I was looking out at this room filled with cheesy lawyers and real estate salesmen, and because it's Florida, bail bondsmen, and they were all slapping each other on the back and smiling fake smiles and passing out business cards and talking with food in their mouth. And the idea just popped into my head that serial murder isn't always a bad idea. And I started taking notes on the little napkins. I went home with a really broad outline of what the first book would be.
In other words, you had homicidal thoughts of your own during this luncheon?
Well, I don't like to think of them as homicidal thoughts, perhaps just thoughts of an adventurous nature that end somewhat fatally.
Got it. Okay. Well, the first book was Dexter, Darkly Dreaming Dexter, excuse me.
Darkly Dreaming Dexter.
And that's correct. The one that caught the attention of producers. Give me some sense of how that works in terms of them approaching you, you approaching, however it worked, and the negotiation process to make this all happen on the screen.
Right. Well, you know, I worked for 12 years in Hollywood, and I'd always been on the Please Like My Project side of things. And so when I left Hollywood and started writing books, it was sort of a shock that, you know, they came to me and said, please, can we do it? And as far as the negotiations and things go, I have nothing to do with that. I'm really sort of an idiot savant. I leave that to my agent. But they came to us and said, we love it, we'd like to do it. And it just sort of went from there. I consulted a little bit on the first season, especially the pilot, but it was, you know, it was artistic, not really negotiating or anything.
Yeah, I've heard from so many authors who have sold to the silver screen, if you will, that that's one of the easiest ways to lose control of your product, actually.
Oh, totally. And in the first place, there is Ernest Hemingway's classic advice, which is, if you have to do it, take your book to the border of Hollywood and throw it over. When they throw back money, grab it with both hands and run like hell. But in the second place, I also know I was luckier than anybody else I know, because the adaptation they did was very faithful in spirit and very well done. So I got no complaints at all about Showtime.
One of the things that I noted is that your Dexter on the printed page is a little bit different personality than the one that's portrayed on the Showtime series. I found him a little more flippant, if you will, a little bit more of a wise guy.
Right. That was my biggest note to them while they were making the pilot, that, you know, remember, it's funny, too. You know, Grand Guignol has been done, but I thought Grand Guignol with a sense of humor about it was a little bit different, and that's what I was doing in the books. So it didn't always work out, but that was my main note, I think. And in the books, it's there was a French writer in, I think, the 1800s, Alex de Tocqueville. And he came to America and wrote back a series of very funny letters about what strange people the Americans are. And that's kind of Dexter in the books. He's looking at this bizarre race called humans, of which he's not a member, of course, and making comments on the absurd things they do.
Why do you think the audience liked this guy? My wife would watch, and she started it reluctantly. But every time he was about to dispatch someone, she would say, good, good, go for it, Dexter.
Well, that's part of it. I mean, he kills people that we all secretly feel should be killed. But the rest of it is really a mystery to me. I mean, I'm still scratching my head over that one. The only thing I've come up with is what's wrong with people? Because, you know, you should remember he's a bad guy. He's a serial killer. And nobody seems to get that.
You actually appeared in one of the episodes, as I understand it.
I did. I begged and whined and wheedled for 3 years, and they finally relented, and I had a season 3, episode 10, I had a bit part. And the most memorable thing about it happened off camera, because I am the only six-line actor in history to get his own trailer on the set.
Well, that does make you somewhat unique. I'd like to talk about the book, the latest book, Dexter is Dead, but obviously we don't want to talk too much about plotline because we don't want to spoil it for those who haven't read. But let's start by talking about the irony of the fact that it begins with the notion that Dexter has been accused of murders for once that he didn't actually commit.
Right. You know, when I started thinking about how it would end, one of my first thoughts would be that he would end up in, you know, the last thing we see of him would be in jail, somehow caught for a murder. And then, because I'm basically a sick person, I started twisting that very simple idea and thought, why don't we start with him in jail, and it would be for a murder he didn't commit. So that seemed to be like the perfect place to start the story out. He is all alone. His sister has abandoned him. He's lost his job, his reputation, absolutely everything, and he's got no one to help him out, and the system is now rigged against him. The evidence is being falsified, and it's stacking up, and he really has no hope whatsoever. And I thought, what a great place to start. How do I get out of this?
And then we can point out that he brings his brother into the situation, gives the plot some muscle and tension, if you will, and the brother is an unusual character in and of himself.
Yeah, and oddly enough, he's been sort of a fan favorite, too. A lot of people ask, when is the brother coming back, Brian? And I keep saying, well, soon. And I thought, this is the perfect way to go out with his brother. And so he does come back into the story and provides a couple of unusual and, I hope, interesting twists to it. My favorite kind of story is one where you start and you think you're in a race, and then you realize it's a juggling contest, but that sort of, you know, turns into something else altogether. And that's kind of what happens in this book. I mean, it stays true and faithful, and I hope relatively close to the version of reality that we've been dealing with, but it does take a lot of twists.
One thing I will point out, and again, without disrupting the story at all, we'll just say that your book does not end the same way that the television series does.
No, not at all. And I'm still getting hate mail about that, by the way. I had nothing to do with the end of the TV show, and I haven't even seen it. So I have no idea what is making people that outraged. But I do still get tweets and emails and things calling me all kinds of unmentionable things for doing that to the character.
Well, I don't want to dwell on this part of your story too much, but now that you've brought it up, I gather that some of these people really don't like you and that you sense have a sense of danger from some of them.
It's not a sense of danger. It's an actually spelled out danger. I've had death threats. I had one guy who's apparently stopped taking his meds and started posting libelous and dangerous things all over the internet about me. I've had a guy just walk in my front door. I've had letters going, "We know who you are and where you are and we're coming," and that kind of thing. So I do get a little nervous about it from time to time.
Does this kind of thing, to your knowledge, has it happened with other authors, successful authors such as yourself?
None that I know of. I mean, a lot of authors have, you know, nearly crazy fans that, you know, pitch a tent on their front lawn and won't go away. But I haven't had those for some reason. I just get the ones who should be locked up somewhere.
Did this have any bearing at all on your decision to end the series?
No, not really. I mean, because I figured it was my job and I was going to keep doing it as long as, you know, that was what the program was going to be. It maybe should have. What it's affected is, you know, I have a really good security system and other measures now, countermeasures. So I've taught all my kids to shoot and to be careful and lock the doors and so on, which is a shame, but that's the world I live in.
Yeah. How old are your kids?
They are, let me get this right now, 26, 19, and 12.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, anybody out there listening that's planning to move in on you, be advised that the family is armed. The family is armed.
Yeah, and pretty good shots, too.
I'd like to talk for a moment about your wife. Your wife is Ernest Hemingway's niece. You alluded to Hemingway a little earlier on. I suppose there are a lot of Hemingway quotes going on in your family. But she was also... go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was being cool by not referring to him as Uncle Ernie. But
well, that must be hard to resist. She also is a writer and collaborated with you on some of the earlier books, I understand. What kind of a role did she play in some of the early Dexter books?
Well, in every Dexter book, there comes a point where I've kind of painted myself into a corner, and she's the one that always bails me out. She has a really, really strong and unerring sense of plot and story and structure, which are apparently my weak points. And so she's always been there when I'm stuck, and she tells me how to get out.
Well, that's a handy accomplice to have, needless to say. Is there any chance, do you think, that now with this Dexter series over, that you might spin it off somehow with the brother or other members of the family?
You know, a lot of people ask that, and there have been some really urgent pleas for, you know, how about a new series with the kids, Cody and Aster? Or, you know, how about a new series with Deb, Dexter's sister? And I've got nothing on the drawing board right now. I mean, I'm not ruling out, but I am kind of moving on and, you know, trying to create a new world somewhere.
And any ideas as to what that's going to entail?
Yes. I have a couple of things out there, and they're being looked at, considered at the moment, and I should know in a few weeks what's going to come up next. I'm still sort of at the throw things at the wall and see what sticks stage.
One of the things I'd read about you is the fact that you have been working, and perhaps still are, working on a Dexter comic book.
Yes, I did two series with Marvel Comics, and those are widely available now. And it was a real thrill. I mean, I grew up with Marvel comic books. I was still secretly reading them in college until I found out that everybody else on the floor of my dorm was sneaking down to read them when I wasn't looking. So it's one of those secret pleasures that turns out to be everybody else's secret, too. So it was a thrill to work with Marvel. I really do love most of what they've done, and I think they turned out pretty well. They're still selling.
Is this something we might classify as graphic novels or strictly comic books?
Yeah, well, you know, graphic novels sounded a little snooty to me. I was trying to write comic books, but each of the two story arcs has been collected, and they're available as graphic novels in hardcover, as well as in the single-issue softcover format.
I'll have to look for those. We'll have to look for them. Only have a couple of minutes left. I wanted to ask you about your feeling about the publishing world today. There's a lot going on. E-books are making their presence felt. Of course, we have the audio books. I think you've been involved with some of those in the past.
Right.
What is life going to be like, do you think, in the foreseeable future for authors in this crazy publishing world?
Well, it's not good altogether. And on the one hand, we've all sort of become content providers rather than writers. The mid-list is dead, which is a big tragedy. I have a lot of friends who are good writers with dozens of books out, but they were classified as mid-list, and they can't get published. You have to be a bestseller every time out, or you're out of work. So that's a shame. As far as e-books and all of that goes, I don't think the electronic media will change things that much. You're still looking, you know, at a book. It's just in a different format. And I think an awful lot of people really want the old-fashioned bound, printed thing to hold in their hands. So I don't think that's going to die. I do think we sell fewer of those and more e-books every year, though.
What advice would you have for an aspiring writer, then, given this changed landscape?
Well, I have two pieces of advice. The first is don't do it. Find something else to waste your time on. And the second piece is, if you have to, which is the only excuse, if you can't help it, learn to arc weld, because you're going to have a semi-independent profession where you can set your hours to pay the rent until the unlikely event that lightning strikes and you can support yourself with writing. It's a lot harder now, and I'm really glad I'm not starting out in the climate as it is now.
I wonder, given the way technology has changed the way we communicate, how many budding writers there are out there. I mean, we're using symbols now to communicate, you know, in contractions rather than full words, full sentences, full paragraphs.
Yeah, it's true. I think the real art nowadays is to be able to write a 140-word novel, because everybody's doing it now. Everybody's all over the Internet and the social media, and everybody's a writer. It takes nothing to get published except a computer or a pad or phone. I don't know, the real thing seems to be growing a little dim and distant, but there are aspiring writers everywhere I go, and they're always asking, you know, what do I do, how do I get an agent, how do I get published, and the same old questions. So maybe it'll survive. I sure hope so.
Well, we're certainly going to be looking forward to whatever it is you decide you want to do next, Jeff Lindsay.
Thank you.
We enjoyed everything you've produced so far. It's been wonderfully entertaining and wonderfully done. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's been a fun time.
Me too. That's Jeff Lindsay. The book, once again, is Dexter is Dead, the last of the 8-volume Dexter series. Coming up on Cityscape, the impact of Ferguson on the arts and artists. This is Cityscape on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.